Welcome back to the Avram Rosenzweig Show. And my name, of course, is Avram Rosenzweig. And I'm very delighted to be here on this beautiful fall day. The colors are overwhelming to me. Sometimes I look and I literally have to hide my eyes because the beauty is too great. I don't know if you've ever felt that way. It happened with a man the other day. I was listening to this brilliant, brilliant man, a Torah scholar, and I just saw in his eyes something so great and something so spiritual that I literally had to look away. It was just too much for me. So if you've ever had that, I understand that completely. This is the fourth of my new podcast, and of course it's a follow-up from my old show, which is Hat Radio. And this is a similar show. It's long-format interviews. I get very excited about learning about people and talking to individuals and seeing who they are and seeing what they're all about. I think that by doing that, we can actually say to ourselves, well, this world is perhaps a little smaller than we thought, and I can see the similarities between humankind. I think by hearing about other people's experiences, really no matter what they are, that one listens and they go, yeah, that's happened to me too, or that's something that I completely understand. So let's dig really deeply into our conversations here on the Avram Rosenzweig Show, get to know humankind, and to grow ourselves through that. Before we launch, I do want to remind people that I am a purpose and meaning coach. And if you want to know what that means or where to find more information, please go to avramrosenzweig.com. Essentially, I'm a real big proponent of people finding their meaning in life and therefore finding their happiness. Right? That's a classic thing of Viktor Frankl, who was a great psychologist, right up there with Freud and Jung. And he came up with a concept called logotherapy. And his idea was to help people find meaning. And when they find meaning, that they will move forward in life in a most healthy and productive way. And I find that to be true. So if you forgot what your dreams are, you know, sometimes people, when they retire, they think to myself, man, I just can't remember what I wanted to be. Perhaps you wanted to be a fireman or a boxer, you know. Give me a call. Be in touch. It's avram.rosenzweig@gmail.com. Or again, go to my website at avramrosenzweig.com, and I'd be more than happy to talk to you. And the first go around is for free, which is great. I also give a class on the portion of the week on Thursday night, and you're invited to that. And you can get in touch with me again through my website. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on in my life, and this podcast is one of them. My learning of Torah is another, and of course my coaching is the third. So I'd like to share that with you, and if you're interested in knowing more about it, then let me know. Now, today I am deeply honored to have as my guest an old friend of mine who's 23 years old. Usually when we say old friends, we mean someone who's like 50 or 60 years old, you know? And his name is Josh Arbus. How are you, Josh?
Good, good. Avram, super excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Oh, yeah. I am really excited to have you. I've known you for many years, and I've known your family for as long or longer. I was at your bar mitzvah. People come up to me, Josh.
10 years ago now.
Yeah, 10 years. People come up to me, they go, you know, I was at your bris, you know, and they're, of course, they're aging themselves and me. But I was at your bar mitzvah, and I was, once again, very honored to be there. Your parents are amazing people. They really are.
They are. They are. My parents are fantastic. They're tremendous role models for me, and I'm privileged to be close to them, learn from them, yes, every day, talk to them, love them. They're fantastic people.
Yeah, they really are. And we're going to talk about them throughout the show because I think it behooves us to do so. You know, the impact upon me from my parents, the impact upon you from your parents is palpable. It's something that's very real, right?
It is.
It really is. So who are you? Well, let's talk a little bit about that and we'll dive right in. You're currently working in infrastructure consulting, financial and operational advisory for large civil infrastructure projects like transit systems, airports. What does that mean? Like, what did you do?
What does that mean? I give advice and provide analysis for any kind of large infrastructure project. Each day we interact with transit systems, roads, airports, hospitals, education systems, government programs and policies, And oftentimes governments, as fantastic as they are, and private firms seeking to provide these public goods and public infrastructure need some additional work done that they can't do in-house. So what I do and what my team does is we provide operations advice and financial analysis for these projects. If a government agency wants to spend billions of dollars on a new subway line, for example, it isn't as simple as just taking the money out of the bank and
go to the ATM, right?
Exactly, and buying a new subway line. There's so much that goes into the infrastructure that we see and use every day, okay, including financing, how to plan it, how to organize it, how to schedule construction, what happens after it's in operation, how do those operational contracts and procurements get drawn up. There's so much work in that field, and I don't know, it's a very exciting place to be.
Is it?
I've been an infrastructure geek ever since I was a kid.
Yeah.
So
you played SimCity.
Working. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I was also that kid who would sit in the front of the subway train, pretending I was the driver, and it's exciting to have a role in these mega projects and to really inform these projects which improve the lives of so many.
That's awesome. So do you feel like an adult?
I do. It's interesting because this is the first career stop which does not have a definite end date. Up until now, it was always, okay, you'll be in high school for 4 years and then university for 4 or 5, and then you may do a master's, which I haven't done yet, or you may do an internship here for a summer or for 4 months, 8 months, whatever it is. But this is the first career milestone where there hasn't been an end date yet. It's indefinite.
I started
this job in July, and there's no end date in sight. Right now, I'm enjoying it, but we'll see where it takes me and where
you
my
like
future
making some cash
holds.
Too. You like when you get
yeah,
a check.
Yeah, thanks.
It's nice, isn't it?
It is.
You buy anything?
It is here and there. Mainly just fancy coffee, and then saving up. The Toronto housing market, and really housing markets everywhere,
yes,
are insane.
So listen, I just want to add to this that a little bit of background on you more. So you're a very proud Jew.
I am, yes.
And I want to get to that too, because I think there's a need for a discussion about proud to be a Jew. There's an awful lot of anti-Semitism out there, and we really need to remind our people and not our people about the beauty of the Jewish people. So I want to get to that too.
Certainly.
The other thing that really intrigues me about you, and always has, I've always had great respect for you, Josh, is that you grew up with a stutter, or a stammer, as it's also called, right? And
exactly.
I think on the spectrum of stuttering, would I be correct to say that it was a serious stutter?
I would say that it's serious in the sense that it exists. And I think that regardless of perceived severity, any stutter can be severe or moderate or mild, however you choose to perceive it. I think that's the most important classification. I don't think the level of speaking facility has an impact.
Yeah. Okay, so that's beautiful what you're saying.
But that's just my opinion.
Because that's the outcome of therapy.
Exactly. Well, it depends what kind of therapy. I've had therapy experiences which have been great, and ones which have been terrible and quite scarring, if I can say. And the best quote-unquote speech therapy I've had hasn't been speech therapy at all. It's been life experiences and times where I've stepped out of my comfort zone, which have taught me that, hey, I can do this, which have been the most impactful. I haven't learned much from actual speech therapy.
Oh, interesting. Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I want to give our listeners some context as to what it was that you were challenged by, what it was that you were dealing with. I do love the outcome of where you're at. I think it's marvelous. I've been reading up on stuttering quite a bit. And indeed, the TED Talks that I've listened to, people will say, it's not that I have a challenge speaking. It's that I had a challenge not being able to accept myself for who I was.
It's true.
And I think that's marvelous. And I want to talk about that. But before we get there, when I was at your bar mitzvah, you were standing up in front of the crowd who had assembled to celebrate your existence at 13 years old.
Yep, that was September 8th, 2012.
Yes.
Holy Blossom Temple.
Great
in
food.
In Toronto.
Great food.
Indeed.
And you're a chef, so you know good food. And I remember sitting there, you gave a speech. And you stood up in front of the oilum, as we call it, in front of the crowd. And you went about expressing what you had written and what was on your mind. And I remember at that time, when you were articulating the words on that paper in front of you, there were times where you would get, tell me if this is the right word, okay, where you would get stuck. Is that a right word?
So the lingo that's commonly used is a block. So anytime there's an interruption in the pattern of speech or a repetition, that's just called a block.
Okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes you would get blocked for a second, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Sometimes the block would go on for 20 seconds. And I watched people around me and their response. And a lot of people were rooting for you. Like, okay, here, get to the next word. You can do it. And some people were almost like embarrassed.
Yeah.
What was your experience that way? Did you see both?
What was my experience? I mean, at this point, it was 10 years ago. So I've thankfully had a lot of those experiences, some positive and some negative. And I say thankfully because I've learned a lot from them, even though they have been challenging. But I will say that at the time, and this goes for anything, at least now, I was more focused on what I was trying to say than how other people perceived me. And of course, that sounds cliche. And I think everybody is a bit self-conscious as to how other people perceive them.
Yes.
But I think I've learned over time to focus on how I see myself first before how other people see me. And anyways, to inspire others to see me in a more positive light.
But you were bullied as a kid, right?
For sure, sure. It was not easy. I'm talking about my stutter in a very positive light right now, but I can tell you that it took a very long time to get here, and there were many, many painful moments over many, many years in this process.
You told me an interesting thing about those people who had bullied you. I asked you, do you have their addresses? And you said, yes.
I do.
We'll go out and find them. But your response was most compelling. And you basically said that in your head, you were thinking to yourself, you'll see one day.
It's true.
Well, you just expound on that a little bit.
For sure, yeah. I think I'm proud of myself for where I am today. I don't see any area of my life which is lacking. Thank God I have so many amazing things in my life, so many amazing people in my life, so many amazing experiences in my life. I think that I really have come a long way, and I'm very happy to be where I am today. And I think at the time I always knew that I would get here. I had some confidence buried deep down, but on the surface it unfortunately wasn't there. And I was bullied as a kid. And it was tough. It was very tough. And then it's funny you say that, because it's hard not to be a bit smug, if I can say that, even though it isn't a good thing, and I wish I was not, when the same people who bullied me as a kid will now come and either ask me for favors or to refer them to a job or help them career-wise, personally. It's just interesting, because the same people who were so rude back then and saw me at my lowest are now hopefully finding a greater respect for me, but just becoming more respectful as people.
Did they apologize, any of them?
Some, yeah. I wouldn't say that it's ever been a direct topic of conversation where people have directly apologized for it, but indirectly they've said, "Wow, I'm so proud of the person that you've become, how you've grown with this," and you could tell that they probably felt bad about what they said when we were kids.
Did that make a difference to you?
Yes and no. I'm not so interested in them feeling remorseful as much as I am about everybody gaining a greater understanding of stuttering and just being a respectful person as a whole. Pirkei Avot, a Jewish text.
We should say it's Ethics of Our Father.
Yeah, yes, it's Ethics it's like, of our ancestors.
Of our ancestors. It's like a self-help book, right?
Yes, yes. It espouses judging people favorably, learning something from everybody, because I think everybody has something to offer. If you see someone with a challenge, the best thing you can do is to learn from them.
Yes.
And to treat them favorably and with respect. So that's the most important thing. I'm not interested in anybody being remorseful or feeling bad. We should take our past experiences and try as much as we can to grow from them.
You know, Josh, as far as back as I can remember, you have always had this inimitable spirit.
Thank you.
You have always had this larger than life, not experience, I'm sorry, character.
Thank you.
And I remember that when I attended a class, I actually gave a class at Beth David Synagogue, of which you attended.
I was there, yeah.
Remember that?
I was probably 15 or 16 at the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there were probably about 20 kids in the room. And the baton was passed to you to speak, and you spoke. And you would get blocked. And I'll tell you what was incredible was you were loved and liked so much by that group that when you were blocked, the kids would just sit and listen. And because they were kids, there was none of this bullshit that adults do, right? You know, we get all self-important about how patient we are and all this stuff. They would just listen like you were a buddy of theirs. And, you know, they would allow you to finish as they would anybody else. And then they would comment on what you had to say. And I thought to myself, it's you to a large extent that created that environment.
I feel very privileged to have amazing friends who have supported me throughout this whole journey, who see me for who I am and not as a stutterer, but just Josh as a person who stutters. And from high school onwards, it was for those friends who I've made over time, who have supported me and who have built me into the person who I am today, thankfully.
When do you not stutter?
When do I not stutter? I would say that I always do. It's a part of me. There are some days and some moments where I stutter more. There are some some moments where I stutter less. It can change by the week, by the day. There are some seasons, I mean, not calendar seasons, but different sections of time where I'll have more difficulty, less difficulty. There's no clear pattern. I would say anytime I'm nervous, I tend to stutter a bit more, or if I'm in an awkward environment, although I wouldn't say that it's a direct correlation. There are some times where I have no reason to be anxious and I'm totally not anxious, and I'll block for 20 seconds. And then there are other times where I have every reason to be nervous, such as public speaking. And for some rhyme or reason, I'll speak quote unquote fluently. And there's no challenge at all.
Mel Tillis was a country singer, and when he sang, he never stuttered.
So singing is interesting. This is almost universal among those who stutter, is when you sing, you tend not to block. And I'm not positive on this, but I think it's because you utilize a different region of your brain when you sing, separate from the region that you use for speech. So as a result, you tend not to stutter when you sing.
Yeah, one of the fellows who did this TED Talk that which I spoke of, he said that his therapist advised him to think of his speaking as if he were singing.
So that's an interesting strategy. It just so happens that I have quite possibly the worst singing voice anybody has ever heard. I'm tone deaf, so unfortunately that's a no-go for me. I wish I could be on Broadway, but of course.
Do you want to sing something for us now?
No, absolutely not.
Like Shalom Aleichem. Some of the people, the famous people who have had stutters or stammers. Or
a actually, lot of people.
We should say, right, who had stutters, not that they were stutterers.
Yes, and I would be intentional to say have. There is no cure for stuttering. You can just manage it, but there is no cure. Anybody who has stuttered as an adult continues to stutter and is just good at managing it.
Okay. So some of the people are Emily Blunt,
yeah,
the actress.
Yeah. I'm a fan.
James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
John Stossel, Bill Walton, Mel, yep, Tillis, Winston Churchill.
Yes, Winston Churchill.
Did you know that?
Yes, I did. King George VI as well.
Yeah, there was a movie. Did you see the movie?
Fantastic.
Were
movie.
You blown away by that? Yeah,
fantastic. I was probably 11 or 12 when it came out. And it was fantastic. Up until that point, I had only ever seen stuttering depicted in the media in a negative light, as a weakness, as a problem that just had to be fixed, or that people who stutter would be shepherded off into the margins of life. But this was the first major Hollywood production where somebody who stuttered was in a position of power, and it was a funny movie. It was an enchanting movie. It was fantastic.
Do you feel a camaraderie with people who stutter?
Certainly. So I've gone to a few support groups here in Toronto. I'm actually a part of a Zoom support group for people who stutter in Israel, which is a fantastic opportunity to practice my Hebrew, yes, in a low stress environment, and it's tremendous to meet other people who stutter and have had similar challenges and who have had a similar experience.
So is there a cultural component to stuttering at all? This might sound silly, this question, but let's say Hebrew has intricacies within the language itself that perhaps English or French does not. Are Israeli stutterers different than Canadian stutterers?
My instinct is to say no, no more than Canadians and Israelis are different in a matter of culture or expressive style. The languages are of course different, and there are different consonants that you stress, of course, but I wouldn't say that it's too different, and people's responses and reactions to stuttering tend to remain the same.
So when you're on the Zoom with an Israeli group and someone's blocking,
yeah,
and let's say they're blocking a lot, what's happening in your mind? Anything at all? Like, are you saying to yourself, A, come on, man, you can do this? Are you saying, B, yeah, I get this? Or C, you're just waiting?
It's a really interesting question you ask, because I don't think about what other people think when they see me or when they listen to me often enough. I often just pretend other people aren't there if I'm public speaking, for example. But when I hear someone else who's stutters and is say blocking a lot or having a difficult sentence that they're speaking, it really is a unique experience for me, because it isn't something that I hear too often. I mean, having been in these support groups and heard myself on recordings, it's something that I have experience with, but not too often. So I would say it's more so a feeling of empathy and understanding, because I struggle with the same condition that they do, but certainly it's an experience of encouragement and anticipation for them, obviously without trying to rush them or make them feel uncomfortable.
Right now, when you were blocked,
yes.
Where are you in your head? What's happening in your head?
That's a great question. I would say just trying to focus on what I have to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you breathing? Because I know deep breathing is a big deal, right?
So it's interesting. A lot of what we call disfluencies or blocks happen because of uncoordinated breathing. So that is a large contributor to the manifestation of stuttering, is breathing. So that's something that I sometimes do work on, is trying to retime my breaths with my speech and focusing on coordinated eloquent speech.
So there's a theory that stuttering comes from various different places. Some people say it's genetic.
Right.
Are there other stutterers in your family?
No. I'm lucky to be the first one.
You are.
Yeah.
Right? Some people ask, does it come from anxiety? You touched on that before. Anxiety can exacerbate it.
Yeah.
But that's not the reason for it.
But it isn't the cause, no. And even so, I have seen some literature on genetic causes for stuttering, although I would say that of everybody who I know who stutters, it's say less than half who also have a relative who stutters as well. So obviously there's some selection bias in there with the people who I know, but I'm not so sure that the genetic links have been drawn there.
Do you believe in the theory that individuals who stutter have neurological challenges with learning?
I don't think so. I don't want to quote too much, although thankfully I've never had any challenges academically or
you're a bright guy.
Cognitively.
Yeah.
School was always an exciting time for me. I was always passionate about my academics, working hard. I've love to read. I love to write, to do math, read scientific journals. I don't think there's any kind of cognitive or intellectual link there.
When you were interviewed for your job, were you concerned? Did you block during the interview? Was that an issue at all?
So I certainly blocked. Was it an issue? No. I always try to begin any kind of public speaking engagement, or really any time I'm meeting someone new for the first time, it always helps to break the ice a little bit, because the person I'm talking to is probably wondering, oh, why is he speaking like this? Did he forget his name? Is he unsure?
Yes.
Is he having a seizure? Is he tired? I've been asked all of those, and the answer is no. I'll often begin by saying, hi, I'm Josh, and just so you know, I stutter. And then I also try to remind them that it really shouldn't have any bearing on the interaction that I have with them, be it at work, if I'm giving a presentation to colleagues or to a client. Mm-hmm. I always begin with it, and then I remind people that unless they have a hard time hearing me or understanding me, in which case I'm always happy to repeat myself, then there really shouldn't be any issues. And oftentimes I enjoy tossing some humor in there as well. So of course, with the COVID-19 pandemic for the last 2.5 years, much of our time has been spent working from home on Zoom meetings or Teams meetings.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll joke, oh, I wish I could blame this on my internet or a Zoom glitch, but this is just how I speak. and it almost always elicits a chuckle from people.
Have you ever not gotten something because of your because you stutter?
Thankfully, I don't think so. I've often had to work harder than other people to accomplish certain things. Yeah. I've taken more time to practice presentations I'm giving. I've had to be more intentional with my speaking opportunities, and I've also had to push myself further, such as answering questions in class when I was in high school and university, making sure to be as talkative as I can in work meetings. But thankfully, I haven't had any doors closed in my face.
This fellow said he was going through a drive-in at McDonald's, and he was wanted chicken nuggets. And he practiced before he came to the window chicken nuggets.
Oh, all the time.
Do you practice stuff?
All the time. If I'm at a drive-through or ordering something at a restaurant, or even just introducing myself, I'll always rehearse it a few times in my head. Although I don't think that's any different for people who don't stutter. In talking to some friends of mine, a few of them say, oh yeah, I always rehearse things in my head.
Yeah.
I'm always super nervous to introduce myself. I often forget people's name if I'm meeting them for the first time, because I'm so focused on saying my own name, right, which is right. It's true for me. So I don't think that's something that's unique to people who stutter.
Yeah, I agree with you. And he said he went through the drive-through, and he couldn't get the chicken nugget out, and the woman started laughing, or saying there's something wrong with you, and then all of a sudden he got it out in this burst of anger. He said, "Chicken nuggets, God damn it!" He yelled at her.
that's interesting, because if I'm angry about something, I tend to block less.
Yeah, so do you ever think to yourself, I should be angry all the time and then I just won't stutter?
Is I mean,
that's
it's
just absurd.
It's in the same category as singing everything because you don't stutter when you sing. It just isn't feasible. Also, I'm not really an angry guy. I don't think it would be consistent with my character.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. So I've been referring to these TED Talks.
Yeah.
Juan Lopez has been a stutter since he's a kid. And he talked about the gift of his stutter. And he said that he was at an airport speaking with some friends. And while he spoke, he had some blocks. This fellow calls him over and he says to him, I wonder if I could speak with you. And he said, sure. He said, I have schizophrenia in my family. And it's perceived as being genetic or is genetic. And I'm really frightened about getting it. And I wonder if I could just speak to you because you seem to have gone through stuff in life and worked it through. I see how many friends you have. He says, I've never spoken with anybody about this. And they set about speaking for a long period of time until their planes left. He said, to me, that's a gift because I would never have had that conversation otherwise. I would not have been able to help this individual otherwise. So my question to you is, what is your gift of stuttering?
Huh. That's a very interesting and quite important question, I would say. My gift is to pass on the lessons that I've learned from my challenges with it. It hasn't been an easy ride. I've had probably hundreds of moments where I've been embarrassed because of it, or I've blocked for sometimes upwards of 30 seconds. I've been put down. I've put myself down. And if there's any gift that I feel I have, it's for the lessons of confidence and of acceptance and of judging everybody favorably that I've learned. So that's certainly something that I want to pass on. That's a big goal in my life is to transfer these lessons to others around me.
Yeah, Juan Lopez said, all of you here in the audience have a stutter. You may not speak as I do, but you all have a challenge in life. And I thought that was highly significant.
For sure. Everybody has a challenge in their life. Every single person on this earth, all almost 8 billion of us have some challenge or another in our life, be it a physical disability, a learning disability, anxiety, even something as seemingly simple as a food allergy. Everybody has a challenge in life, and as cheesy as it may sound, I hope that the lessons I've learned from my challenge with stuttering can help others live the full lives that they want to live.
Gordon, Sharon.
Yes.
Your mom and dad.
Yes.
Some of us are really blessed.
Yes.
To have
I am.
Superlative parents.
I am.
I know your dad really well, because he was on the board of directors of the AHFTA, an organization I started, and he traveled abroad with us. Your father has also an inimitable spirit. He's a happy man. He's an accomplished human being. He works with some of the most difficult people in the medical field. He's a doctor. Your mom has already written 2 books. She's actually advised me. She's coached me on writing. And when she does, she's one of those individuals who's consistently complimentary and very, very supportive and encouraging. And
that's
I
true.
Love that. I love that because I don't find enough of it in our society. How much of a role did your parents play in getting you to this point today?
Great question. I mean, especially as as a kid, my parents were tremendously impactful in reminding me of my self-worth, even when it was difficult to wake up in the morning and put a smile on my face. They've always been there to support me, and they've always had my best interests at heart. Now I will say that at some points it was challenging. I could see that they wanted my stutter to go away probably more than I did.
Yeah.
I would see the struggle in their faces when I would have a block for upwards of 30 seconds. I would feel their pain intensely. But having said that, I think they've done their best to be nothing but supportive and helpful, and they've given me so much love through this whole journey.
How have your brother and sister been throughout your journey?
Good. They've been extremely supportive as well. It was a bit different, I think, because when my stuttering began to onset, they were quite young, so I don't think they really understood it at first, and I think for most kids or most people, it takes a while to really understand what it is and understand it's okay. But they've been super about it and have stood up for me on numerous occasions and have just been great family members and pillars to rely on in this journey.
How old were you when your stutter came up?
I was about 9. I'm not sure I remember exactly how or when, although it started with a few sounds at first, S and T sounds, as a kid, and of course even now. I was and am a fan of infrastructure, specifically transportation and public transit, and I vividly remember trying to say the words streetcar and subway.
Yes.
And around age 9, I thought to myself, huh, why is it that I'm having trouble saying these words? And then it transpired from there. It spread to vowel sounds. And then I would say over the course of a few months, it just began to be universal across my entire speech pattern.
There's a theory that some people are traumatized and therefore a stutter comes on.
It's an interesting theory. I can't remember a specific occurrence which may have traumatized me. Mm-hmm. I had a great childhood. As far as I remember, there was no particular event which could have sparked this.
Did God give you a blessing? Did God give you a curse? Did he give you a little bit of both?
I think for many years I would have said a curse. I'm a very spiritual person, and for years and years, every day I would pray to God, please make this go away.
Yeah.
Why me?
Yeah.
Why did you make me stutter? But then over time, as I began to learn from it and gain more confidence, it began to transition over into being more of a blessing than a curse. I've grown tremendously as a person because of it, and I'm very thankful for those lessons, the experiences I've had, very much like the fellow you mentioned in the airport. It's been a really positive growth experience for me. So overall, I would say it's certainly been a blessing. Now,
do people pull you aside to talk to you?
All the time.
Do they?
All the time. It's a very fascinating item of discussion for me. I imagine it's also fascinating for others. Sometimes people will ask me questions about it. Why I stutter, how it happened, if there are times where I stutter more or less, and I'm always happy to talk about it and be as open as possible.
Do they ever tell you their problems and say, I can see you're a sensitive person, I'd like to tell you what's on my mind?
Yes, it you know, happens a fair bit.
Does it?
Happens a fair bit. And, yeah. And I'm very happy to play that role because, as I said, I believe that I've been given a gift, and that gift is for the lessons that I've learned from my stutter, and I feel that it's a personal duty to pass those on to other people and help them deal with their challenges, and then beyond that, just to increase awareness about stuttering on the whole. It's a fairly common condition, one in 100 people stutter, but unfortunately there are still people who don't know anything about it, or the fact that it exists, or they have misconceptions. For example, I've often been asked if I forgot my name when introducing myself, or people think that I'm stupid, or that I don't know an answer to something, or that I'm distracted when talking or falling asleep. All those are some pretty common responses to stuttering, and my wish and my goal is for that to happen less, and that everybody should know what stuttering is, what it looks like, and how to be a good listener when someone who stutters is talking to you.
So you have traveled down a road within Judaism of embracing Torah, our people, God. Now the Torah is filled with a plethora of stories, in particular the portions of the week that we're learning now, which is the Sefer Bereshit, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and right up into Shemot, probably halfway through. So there's a lot of storytelling. And then on top of the stories themselves within the Torah, there's what we call Midrashim, which is kind of like a color commentator. Now, one of the color commentators on Moses was that he put a very hot stone in his mouth. And therefore, as he after that and for the rest of his life, he had a challenge with speaking, articulating. How was that for you when you learned that?
It was comforting and exciting to know that the greatest Jewish leader of all time, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, stuttered as well. That,
yeah.
That I had something in common with such a tremendous leader of our people and our faith. It was interesting. I'm not sure that I buy the midrash about him putting a stone in his mouth, although I certainly believe that he stuttered and it impacted his leadership over the course of time when he brought Bnei Israel, the people of Israel, out from Egypt and then to the border with Israel after 40 years in the desert. So it's interesting, it's exciting to know that this has been something that's been mentioned for thousands and thousands of years of history.
So are there such things such as Moses standing before God at the burning bush and saying, I can't be a leader, I can't speak articulately or clearly enunciate, and God said, it's okay, your brother Aaron will speak on your behalf? Would those things at any time in your life, or other individuals whom you know of who went through similar challenges, would you think about that, and would that give you comfort to move ahead in a particular instance?
The confidence that God had in Moses, I can certainly resonate with. There have been times in my life where I've thought, oh, I stutter. Maybe I'm not cut out for this. Maybe I shouldn't give this presentation. Maybe I shouldn't speak up in class. But thankfully, as time has passed, I've overcome that, and I've really challenged myself to be in those situations. I will say the one element of that I don't like is how God asked Aaron to almost speak on Moses' behalf. I can't speak for everybody who stutters, but I'm a very independent person, and I like to be in charge of my own affairs. It would annoy me to pieces to be reliant on someone else to speak for me. For example, anytime I'm talking and somebody tries to finish my sentence to supposedly make it easier for me, I often ignore them and just keep talking to finish my sentence. I'm a firm believer that I can speak just like anyone else.
That's fantastic.
It just sounds a bit different, and it takes me a bit longer to say what I'm going to say. But for the last thing I want is to be dependent on anyone else or a computer to speak for me or anything like that.
You know, in learning the Parshiot and learning the portions of the Torah, the Old Testament, God speaks with Moses quite frequently, almost in every single Parsha. And then and when we get to the end of the Torah, it's Moses speaking to the Jewish people. One never gets the sense within what we call pshat, in the words themselves, that Aaron is there speaking on his behalf.
No.
So de facto, did it happen? Did he actually speak on Aaron's behalf, on Moses' behalf?
I don't know. I should know more about the Chumash, the Sefer Torah than I do. As far as I can recall, there are a few instances in Torah where Aaron speaks on behalf of God and Moses, but I can't name a specific occurrence.
Okay. I love your take on God's response to Moses, because you would know, and I myself had never thought about that. I thought, okay, that was nice of God. You know, you're going to go with your brother, and that's a cool thing to go with your brother, and he's going to be there. If you ever get blocked, he's going to help you through it. But your take on it is much different, and I like that very much.
Thank you. Yeah, I can't speak for everybody who stutters, but I appreciate being independent and self-sufficient.
You're a what you would qualify as being a chef, right? Not a professional chef.
I wouldn't say a chef. I really enjoy cooking and baking for friends and family, but I wouldn't call myself
a chef. What do you like baking?
What do I bake? Anything and everything.
Yeah.
I bake cakes, cookies, pies, challah most weeks, other kinds of breads.
Well, do you have a particular cake that you just absolutely adore and people say, yeah, this is Josh's cake?
Cake, no. Challah, yes.
Yeah?
Yes, although my grandmother...
We should say it's braided bread. We eat it on Shabbat, right?
Yes, yeah. It is a sweet... Well, it's commonly sweet, at least in the Ashkenazi tradition. It is a sweet braided bread that we eat in honor of Shabbat to have a complete meal.
Yes.
Yes, although I will say on the topic of cakes, my grandmother of blessed memory, who passed away in June, would always make this delicious apple cake.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I haven't had the opportunity to make it yet. I think there's a piece of me in missing her that doesn't want to make the apple cake, because that's her apple cake, although I think at some point I'll be due for that to make the famous Babu's apple cake.
Is your mom cool, you working in her kitchen?
She is.
She's okay.
She'll openly admit that cooking and baking is not her domain.
Yeah.
Having said that, she makes some delicious dishes, but by no means is it a passion of hers. The creative culinary activities are very much my domain in our house.
So give me a sense of something perhaps you've made recently for yourself or for the family or for your girlfriend.
Yeah, so where was I? I was in Kingston this past weekend with my girlfriend Georgia, who's fantastic, and I made her homemade pizza and like a really good Caesar salad. One time for a Shabbat dinner, I made a simple but tasty meatball dish with impossible meat. So I was vegetarian for 8 years. So
yeah.
So I've also learned how to make vegetarian dishes. So I made these meatballs with impossible meat and a salad and potatoes in a crispy on the outside, soft on the inside.
Nice.
Type of way.
Nice.
And then for dessert, I made brownie bars, which were pretty good. So again, it isn't anything too fancy, I would say, but just it's a passion of mine to be creative in the kitchen.
You're eclectic in nature.
It's a good stress reliever, I would say.
I find that too. My son is vegan.
Yeah.
So I've started to cook quite a bit, and I really enjoy cooking vegan dishes. It's a lot of fun.
It is.
Yeah, nothing like a great stir fry, and you eat at the end, you go, it's really hearty, it's really wholesome.
Yeah.
And there's no meat in it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's
right?
Healthier for us, healthier for the planet. It's important.
It is.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about Georgia.
Yes, of course.
So how long have you been dating?
Just over a year.
And how's it going?
Good. She's super sweet, she's also been a tremendous support for me. We laugh a lot. We learn a lot from each other, and I really enjoy my time with her.
Were you afraid at all about not being loved? About the potential of you not being loved because of your stutter, that people couldn't get close enough to you?
No, not really. We connected pretty quickly after we first met. It was a pretty quick mutual interest in each other. We're just similar people. We have very complementary personalities. I think as a kid, I worried about finding someone because of my stutter, but thankfully today and certainly for the last few years, that wasn't a concern at all.
How did the two of you meet?
Online. It was a COVID love story. So we nice. We matched on an app called Hinge, which is similar to Tinder, if you've heard of it, but it's a bit more serious. You can set some more preferences. You can write a longer profile, and the idea is that it's used for more serious dating versus casual encounters.
Yes.
So we matched on this app called Hinge July of last year, and then we met up for ice cream and a walk, and that was that.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Very romantic.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. And you've met her parents?
Yeah. Yeah. They're
they like
fantastic
you.
Fantastic people. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Well, Josh Arbus, I want to thank you so much for doing this interview.
For sure. This was a great interview. Avram, thank you so much for this opportunity. And I hope that if everybody enjoyed our conversation and this perspective.
I think, no doubt. I think people will really enjoy it. And I think people will be greatly inspired by you.
Thank you.
I've always been greatly inspired by you. Always.
Avram, the same goes for you from Vehafta to your community work. You're probably one of the most inspiring people in the Toronto and Canadian Jewish communities. So I look up to you. I've looked up to you for a very long time.
Thank you.
And keep doing the amazing work that you do.
I appreciate that very much. I was hoping you would say North America, but no, just kidding. but I just wanted to add, because I think this is so important for you, for your parents, for your family, for everyone listening. You've always had a smile on your face.
I try.
I'm not undermining the challenges you've gone through, like all of us, you know. But I just remember from the time that I met you, you've always been a most positive human being. And one just can't help but look and think and see, well, that's a challenge that kid's got. But you know what? Through his inimitable spirit, he's going to be okay. Like, we all knew you were going to be okay. And Baruch Hashem, like they say in the vernacular, thank God, you're okay. You're doing well. You got a nice life.
So.
It's beautiful, yes, right?
Yes.
You know, so you've inspired the hell out of me. And I posted this interview on Facebook, you know, that it was about to happen. And there were a number of people who made every effort to say, well, Josh is my friend too. You know, like people want to be your friend. You know what I mean?
I'm humbled and honored by that.
Yes. Well, you've just done an amazing job, and accolades to your parents and your family too.
Thank you.
And we should say your grandparents too, right?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, my grandparents are fantastic people, and they've taught me so much, and I seek to emulate them.
Well, I wish you well, and I thank you once again, and to all of my listeners, thank you so much for being here and for being part of the Avram Rosenzweig Show. I would like nothing more than to hear from you, and you can reach me at avram.rosenzweig@gmail.com, or you can go to my website at avramrosenzweig.com and tell me what you think of the podcast. Tell me what you think about previous podcasts I've done. I'm open to criticism. I'm open to ideas for guests. And again, I'm fascinated by humankind and its narrative. because everybody has a story to tell.
It's true.
And we're going to come to peace when we get to know each other just a little bit better. So take good care of yourself. Be safe. I always say speak to strangers if you're old enough, because you can learn an awful lot from strangers, right? I know I do. And God bless. And I look forward to being with you once again next week. The show is called The Avram Rosenzweig Show. It is the show that schmoozes.